Hey everybody, this is Alex Merced, and you are listening to, well, actually I want to make this an episode of Data Nation and Web Dev 101. The reason being is that the topic of today's episode is object storage. And that's going to be something that, regardless of whether you're a web developer or a data engineer, data analyst, you're probably going to work with object storage at some point, because it's really become the way we store data on the internet. So oftentimes, you may be using a service like Cloudinary or S3 to upload photos that a user submitted to a form. Or you may be organizing Apache Iceberg tables on your AWS S3 or ADLS storage. Bottom line is, chances are you may end up working with object storage. So to really appreciate object storage, let's go through like the history of like different file storage systems and just sort of the concept of file storage. Because at the end of the day, it's like when you take a look at your hard drive, so basically where your files are stored, all it's doing is storing a bunch of zeros and ones, okay? All this idea of like files and folders, all these things are just an abstraction to make it easier for us people to kind of think through like, hey, what data is on this block of zeros and ones, okay? So again, everything at the end of the day is an abstraction. The idea is what abstraction is going to best lend to being able to do the things we're trying to do. So originally, you know, you have a computer, a single computer. So your traditional file systems just worked about trying to understand what data was on one hard drive. Okay, so basically that one hard drive is sort of like your top level unit, and then you have all these like subunits, you know, as folders or directories in pretty much any file system you've used on any operating system. And then, you know, you keep getting down until you get to your actual file, a file that's actually a unit of something that you can open up in another piece of software or be read by a text editor, whatever. Okay. And that works all well and good. The problem is, again, what if you need to stretch a batch of data across multiple hard drives, okay? So essentially like, or multiple computers, your traditional file system isn't really built to kind of recognize that. It's built for, hey, this is the data on this hard drive, okay? And then typically what would happen is, so you had a system called Hadoop gets created. Now Hadoop really got created in response to data warehouses. So basically generally every kind of database or data warehouse generally creates their own way of organizing the data that they store. They abstract that even further away from you, where you don't even see how it's represented on your hard drive. You don't see it as files. It's just data in the database. But they can be really expensive when other people are maintaining them for you. Okay? So Hadoop was created to kind of deal with that, but essentially came up with sort of a different approach. So basically the idea there is that you have a master node. So you have one computer that accesses the master node that knows all the files that exist. So it has like a master listing. Now these files, they may exist on multiple computers. Okay? And generally, basically what will happen is that it'll always access it from like, let's say the first computer. And then if something happens to that first computer, it'll go to like the backup computer or the next backup computer, depending on how many backups you have, how many of these worker nodes actually have copies of the file. And basically, since that master node has the list of the files, basically, when you interact with the Hadoop cluster, a big network of computers, it looks like one big giant hard drive, even though it's actually across many hard drives across many computers. Okay, so it's a lot different than your, again, traditional file system that works, that sort of maps a single computer or a single hard drive as sort of like a unit. Well, here, like the unit is really stretched across many, many computers. And that's all well and good. Now, object storage takes it a step further. So the idea is that you're still kind of interacting with sort of like this abstracted list of files, except each file is referred to as an object, okay? And they're just objects. And again, everything's just a bunch of zeros and ones on the hard drive at the end of the day. But basically, when you access an object, you're not actually accessing a file. You're accessing this. If you've ever done programming, you've probably created like classes or done objects. And at the end of the day, an object is just a collection of data. Also functions, but less important for our purposes today. So what happens is that each of these objects have a bunch of different metadata about the file you're trying to access. which includes sort of like where the file is located, and the things that where the file is located on object storage. So if you're accessing an object on S3, okay, and S3 stands for, what is it, like seriously simple storage, something like that, on AWS, Amazon Web Services, when I access that object, I'm really just accessing the metadata of that object. And that object, that metadata is going to tell me like what kind of file it is, where it's stored. And the cool thing is that it's replicated. So what makes object storage really nice is that, yes, it's on multiple computers, but it's not like the extra computers are backups. They're all kind of like, if I have like a lot of people accessing the particular file, I will split that load of work across multiple computers. Okay, so that way you can always have like crisp access to that data. So it makes it where like the access to the data is scalable without you having to think about it. You don't have to think about, hey, load balancing and having like different units and whatnot. Okay, so bottom line is you have these objects, they contain all the sort of like metadata, and this file might be across several different, it might be replicated across different regions, across the world, across multiple computers, across multiple networks. You have no idea, nor do you care. So again, unlike Hadoop where you have like a single cluster and basically you're being replicated off a fixed number of nodes in that cluster of computers, and then generally the extra nodes act as backups to the main node that holds that file, here you're kind of replicating across, you know, the abstraction of replication is completely abstracted from you. You just upload data, and all the scaling, all the replication, all that stuff is kind of handled under the hood. So this allows for, you know, reasonably fast. Again, there's limits to how much like replication can be done. This is where you start ending up with what's called like throttling. Okay, where basically the same sort of, usually it's done by the same, what's called a prefix. So again, at the end of the day, there's really not files and folders here. They can make it feel like files and folders, and these like this slash this folder slash that folder is referred to as a prefix. Okay, so what they usually will do is they will say, hey, if too many requests are coming into files within a certain, that have a certain prefix, basically are they in the same folder, you know, there might be some slowdown, because again, there's limits to how many like replicas there might be. And again, you can pay for like faster accessible storage and object storage, but it's more expensive than cheaper tiers. And that's another nice thing about object storage, is that you don't have to do anything different. You can just store your data and say, okay, hey, I want this file stored at like this level, so that way you can minimize your costs. Okay, at the end of the day, like how all each object is treated, it's all a metadata thing. It's like basically in the metadata of the object, how the underlying implementation of storage is going to handle that file. You just worry about accessing the object. Okay, and then basically get the file from there. And again, you can try this out locally. You can use something like Minio and spin up a Docker container, and you have like a local object storage server. Okay, and you can just use it. It's pretty cool. Okay, but yeah, that's what object storage essentially is. But it can be tough to like, you know, because there's steps. Basically, if I were to read files from object storage, I have to go first query the object storage for the object, then go access the object, and then I have to see, hopefully, like, there aren't too many people accessing the object, and identify the replica. So sometimes it can be for really high-speed jobs, thinking like querying a giant multi-petabyte table. Sometimes this may be difficult to query very fast, okay? So if you're querying a bunch of Parquet files, which are built for scanning and built for analytics, you know, you still may have trouble kind of trying to do this in a performant level versus like a database or a data warehouse. And this is where like two technologies really, really come in and change the game. One, table formats, particularly Apache Iceberg. Okay, because basically if I have a, let's say 100,000 files that represent one data set, or let's say 1,000 files that represent one data set on my S3, if I can avoid reading all 1,000 of them, that's going to speed up the process. And Apache Iceberg's metadata allows a query engine to do that. But also Dremio specifically. Like Dremio is really like, while Dremio connects to many sources, databases, data warehouses, works with different file types, basically one of its like sort of a key, like basically where Dremio shines the brightest is when you're trying to read data on your object storage, okay, through its technologies like the Columnar Cloud Cache, that really help accelerate querying object storage. It makes basically having a data lake that's basically using your S3, using your object storage as a dumping ground of data, and being able to query that data almost as fast as you would in a data warehouse or a database, a possible. Okay, which is not something like there's other tools that let you query your data lake, that let you query object storage or Hadoop. But Dremio is really sort of like that's its thing. That's what it does. Okay. Again, you can go query relational databases like MySQL and Postgres with Dremio. You can go query data warehouses like Snowflake with Dremio. But where Dremio really shines is when your data is on the data lake. It basically turns your, between that and Apache Iceberg, your data lake becomes a data warehouse. Okay, it really becomes you have that data warehouse like experience directly on your data lake. So that's where like object storage, so now you know what object storage is, but now you know what tools really make object storage now sort of a new, like a thing. Extends its use cases. Other than just storing a bunch of data and becoming a place where you can archive data, it can really now become the center of at least your analytical workloads. I'm not sure if there's something like that on the transactional side, basically like an equivalent, row-based table format and a row-based tool for you basically literally using your object storage as a transactional database. I'm not sure if there's even a need for that kind of thing. It makes a lot of sense in analytics because at the end of the day, generally what you're going to do is you're going to take all that data from all your databases and all your other places and dump them in your data lake as an intermediary stepping ground to your data warehouse. But hey, if you can skip that second step and just do all the analytics directly on your data lake, then it makes a lot, makes it really compelling and saves you a lot of money. So hopefully you guys found that interesting. My name is Alex Merced. You're listening to Data Nation or Web Dev 101 or one of my technology podcasts. Hopefully you guys enjoyed this, and I'll see you all later. Have a great day.